You're listening to KDNK's Public Affairs program, For Land's Sake. I'm Bill Kite, your host, every second Tuesday of the month at 4:30. Today we're fortunate to have with us John Fahey. Welcome, John.
Thanks for having me.
Try that again. Thanks.
Okay. Was I turned off?
Yeah, I had you turned off. All right. This is something that I deal with every time. Not very technically oriented.
My wife wishes she could have that button.
Yeah, all right. You know, you were here last year and really enjoyed the interview we had. And since then, a lot's happened. You've got a new paper that just got started.
That's right, the Roaring Fork Weekly Journal, which was launched by the Aspen Daily News in December, and I am the one-man guy.
I'm the editor and the editor.
Right. Yeah, that's a lot to be doing. I mean, you've taken it on before, but this is it's a big deal.
Yeah, this is not the first publication that I've helped launch, and it's definitely, it requires one's attention. Let's put it that way.
So you've got other people you've been able to pull in to do some writing for you, have you?
I'm very pleased with the team of underpaid freelancers that we've been able to pull in to write for us. So we seem to have a stable team right now.
Well, that's good. That really is. That can make all the difference. Yeah. You've been pretty prolific with writing books, too. Among a few here, I've got The Colorado Mountain Companion, which I bought last time you were on the show. I bought that from Amazon. And all these are on Amazon, by the way, for those of you listening. Colorado's Continental Divide Trail, A Colorado Winter, Colorado's Mountain Dogs, Mexico's Copper Canyon Country, A Hiking and Backpacking Guide. I was down in the Bronco del Cobre when I was younger, about 35, 40 years ago, I guess it was. Interesting country for sure. Then Smoke Signals Along the Colorado Trail, Along the Arizona Trail, and Up at Altitude, A Celebrating of Life in the High Country. That last title interested me. Tell me a little bit about that book before I go out and buy it.
Well, let's see. That was long enough ago that I don't necessarily remember all the details, but I was living in Summit County. I lived in Summit County for a long time, and I was working at the Summit Daily News and was pretty much allowed to write whatever I wanted to write. It was not a traditional newspaper in the modern-day sense. We were basically unsupervised and resembled more a college paper than a real newspaper. Right. So at the I'd been there a year or two, and a publisher down in Boulder said, why don't you kind of expand on some of these crazy things you wrote, and we'll put it in book form. And one of the ones I remember was assembling a barbecue grill, which took me about 5 days. Yeah. And I was a vegetarian.
Okay. So, yeah, all those books, I'm sure, are worth having in your library. I'm going to start collecting them myself here. I've just got one at this point, but definitely I like your writing, John. I think you're a writer's writer, if that means anything to anybody out there.
That probably means that I drink beer.
There we go, which I think we're going to probably do after the show here. One of the things that I really liked in the articles I've written, that I've read that you've written, was your backpacking experience. Before we came on the show, I mentioned that I had been, when I was younger, able to hike across the whole Gila Wilderness on a solo trip and really enjoyed that experience. I couldn't do it again today just because my hip needs replacing, but tell me a little bit about some stories that happened to you on these backpacking excursions, whether it's along the Arizona Trail. I know you did the Great Smoky part of it, didn't you, as well?
I did. Yeah, I did the Arizona Trail in 1997.
Okay.
And it was I have a particular talent for doing some of these long hikes before the trail's actually done.
Okay.
The first time I did the Colorado Trail, it was not done. I did the Colorado section of the Divide Trail. It was not done. And the Arizona Trail was way not done. So that was the logistics of that hike, which I think took 2 months, were more complicated than the hike itself. And, right. I mean, there were no maps. The Arizona Trail Foundation was just getting started, so they were not really much help. I mean, they tried to be.
Right.
So I was literally having to pull out the old 7.5 quads and piece together trails that were on those maps from 1927 and stuff.
Right.
And it was arduous. Plus, Arizona was having a 30-year drought. So I had to put water caches in all along the trail. No, that was tough sledding. But it turned, nobody died.
Right.
Nobody got hurt bad. Nobody died. So I seem to have a way, maybe this is the writer in me more than the hiker in me, I seem to have a way of kind of attracting misadventures no matter where I go. And
I thought I was the only one that did that.
For most hikers, you get up and you hike, and at the end of the day, you stop hiking, and crazy stuff just seems to come across my path. I was my second day on the Appalachian Trail, which was a long time ago. I found something taped to a bridge abutment. I was a southbounder. I started in Mount Katahdin.
Okay.
And just outside of Baxter State Park, I found something taped to a bridge, and I went over and looked at it, and somebody had left a couple of hits of acid for whoever for the next hiker who came by. And I was like, okay, how often does that happen?
So, really.
Yeah, so anyway, most of it's just putting one foot after another and dealing with blisters.
Right.
But it is, and the Gila Wilderness, I've done a two-week hike across the Gila Wilderness too. Yeah. And that was the first major first-person newspaper story I ever did. I was working for the El Paso Times at the time. And I'm old enough that I remember when you couldn't use first person in any newspaper. I mean, if you tried to, you'd have to say a visitor did so-and-so, referring to yourself in the third person.
Right.
And over the objections of half the staff, they let me do a first person story on this 2-week hike. Actually, I did a series of stories, and half the editors, old timey whiskey drinking editors, were just pissed off that we ended up at won the highest feature writing award the El Paso Times had ever won.
All
so
right.
Everybody was, and I got laid off like a month later. So the story of the world.
Yeah, really. So what about some of the, well, maybe misadventures then that you happened to you or happened to others that are might even be humorous now that weren't then?
Well, let me think of what's okay to say over.
Right.
I did a piece for Backpacker Magazine. I've been writing for Backpacker forever. And I did a piece for them last year on, they put a call out to their writers wanting stories on like the worst trail experience you'd ever had. And when I was on the Appalachian Trail coming out of Hot Springs, North Carolina, I hooked up with a couple of buddies who were not in trail shape. By then I was in pretty good shape. And, we ingested some hallucinogens at lunch, and that was lesson learned on that one. But the one of the guys, the shelter we're going to stay at that night was off the trail a little bit, and one of the guys didn't realize it was off the trail, or he just spaced out, but he hiked past it, and we spent all night looking for this guy, assuming that he was dead.
Right.
Actually sort of hoping he was dead, so we wouldn't have to go through all the search and rescue stuff.
Right.
And then a day later, I slipped and got the only injury I've ever had on a hike, and my foot came out from under me, and I carry a hiking stick. I don't carry trekking pole. I didn't have trekking poles in those days.
Right.
And I came down on my left eye, right on the tip of the hiking stick, and I ripped my eyelid almost all the way off. So you could pull my eyelid down and see the top of my eye.
Oh, man.
Which was, that was uncomfortable. And, later on that hike, This was terrible. We were going to stay at a shelter in the Great Smoky Mountains, and then you have to reserve your shelters. It's a real regulated national park.
Right.
And there was a couple on their honeymoon staying in that shelter. So we thought, okay, that's a little awkward. So we hiked on to the next shelter, and ended up a thunderstorm came through, and we found out a few days later that lightning had hit that shelter that we didn't stay at, killing the lady and paralyzing the guy.
Good.
So, that was, and so all that was in that story I wrote for Backpacker, and they were like, this is almost too terrible to be true. But by and large, let's face it, backpacking's fun, and 99.9% of the experiences are wonderful.
Exactly.
I wish I could do it as well as I used to. I used to be a pretty bomber backpacker, but
yeah, same here.
The back and the all the injuries. Getting old is no fun, that's for sure.
So guidebooks that you've written, have you had some good feedback from
well,
those?
I wrote one guidebook.
Oh, okay.
And that was on Copper Canyon. I wrote it in the 80s when nobody was going to Copper Canyon.
Right.
And I revised it a couple years later, updated it, and that was the last. I learned some hard lessons, and writing destination stories for magazines and writing guidebooks, that's not something I plan to ever do again. I do feel that those kinds of things have many levels of adverse impact on the backcountry and on cultures in other countries. And I guess I was happy that I did that book. I was already familiar with Copper Canyon when I started working on that book, but in retrospect, I'm almost embarrassed that I wrote a guidebook. I think people are better served going into the backcountry unguided.
I kind of have that same opinion and have had a few major experiences by not being able to find the ridge I thought I was on with an old 15-minute topo map, those uh-huh. old ones without the detail of a 7.5-minute topo. So, and guidebooks tend to concentrate people, too, in certain areas. You see an increase in visitation, then you go, oh, shoot, that's what happens.
It's
it draws
inevitable.
People. Yeah, it is.
And anybody who denies that has an ultimate negative impact, let's put it this way, that person and I disagree.
I would make that.
Well, plus I think it's better for the psyche of the hiker too to just sort of not know where you're going, and getting lost is it's sort of like drinking water out of the stream. It's like, oh, you can't drink water out of the stream, you'll die. No, you won't. I mean, you might get Giardia one out of whatever number of times,
right.
But getting lost, for the most part, people when they're disoriented, they freak out. I'm lost. What's going to happen? Well, you just turn around and hike. Some great adventures getting lost, that's for sure.
I've had a couple myself. I like to think of it as just not knowing where I was, not necessarily being lost.
And sometimes you see cool country when you're lost.
Absolutely. And you're listening to For Land's Sake. This is Bill Kite, your host, and our guest today is John Fahey. What are some of the experiences you've had in writing about the outdoors, I think? Because I'm hoping that there's some young writers out there who can be inspired by your articles and your writing. I know that there's a lot of stuff out there that I really enjoy reading. What, help us out a little bit if people would like to know a little bit how you do that.
Well, I guess it would depend on what manner of writing people are thinking about doing. What I recommend to anybody who's thinking in terms of picking up the figurative pen and putting it on the figurative piece of paper is you really need to study writing. It's like anything else. I mean, there's a lot of people who are really good outdoor athletes or whatever and say, okay, I'm going to be a writer as of tomorrow. And it's usually not that easy. I mean, every once in a while, there's going to be somebody who can pick it up really, really easily, especially if that person is already a good storyteller.
Right.
But for the most part, it's something that people who are serious about it as a profession have been studying for 35 years. I mean, the difference in the present verb tense and the present progressive verb tense. I mean, most professional writers, if they don't know it, generally, instinctively know the 17 plus or minus verb tenses in the English language and can use them. I certainly recommend that people read a lot, but not base their writing on somebody else's writing style.
Right.
You can be kind of copycat-ish. Developing an area of expertise that goes hand in hand with your outdoor experience. The great example is Craig Childs with his knowledge of cultural anthropology, which has turned into a great career.
He really is.
If you know about environmental issues, if you know about policy issues, that certainly helps. If you know about kinesiology, if you're wanting to write about mountain biking, just the I put one foot after another gets quite old after a while as a reader and certainly as a writer.
Very true. Yeah, I can think of some of the experiences I had. I learned the hard way. I started a column called Common Ground years ago, and I'd ask a columnist who was with the paper that I had that column in, one day I'd like to start writing, and she goes, well, why don't you start writing now? And so I did, and to write, you need to write. And once you write, that experience comes, and you make a few mistakes along the way that probably the lessons stick with you more than anything else.
Yeah, anybody looks back at their early endeavors, whether you're a carpenter, a writer, or whatever. And pretty much you're going to say, oh, boy.
Yep.
I look back at my Colorado Trail book that I wrote. John Fielder took the photographs. And I look at some of the narrative techniques I was trying to employ there, and I'm almost embarrassed.
I look back at some of the journals. I think I'd been better off if I just burned them, the early ones.
You know? There's something to be said for that, that's for sure.
What sticks out in your mind when you're writing that could help young writers? Something that technique you employ or something that a trick you learned? I don't know exactly how to put this, but that could save some people out there some grief.
The most common question I think I've ever been asked is, what do you do with writer's block? And that's generally means you're not ready to write the thing, but sometimes you have to. I mean, if you're on deadline, you have to do the thing.
Right.
And the technique that I utilize, and I recommend that other people utilize, is pretend like you're telling that story to somebody you would be comfortable telling that story to. For me, it's a friend named Curtis Robinson who spent a lot of time in the Roaring Fork Valley. He used to edit the Aspen Daily News. And whenever I'm kind of stuck, I picture myself in a bar, you know, after drink number 19, telling that story to Curtis Robinson, and it kind of loosens up the mental logjam. By that same token, it would be the same as if you were writing a letter to a friend, and that kind of breaks that up a little bit too. And if those techniques really don't work, then you're probably not really ready to do the story. But one other hint is, already know what you're going to write when you sit down in the chair, before you sit down in the chair. So rather than sit down, turning the computer on, staring at the blank page, as you're going on a hike, as you're whatever, you should already be thinking, when I sit down, this is what I'm going to write. These are my first few sentences, and that really helps with the momentum.
Yeah, I try to keep some kind of little small notebook with me, too, when an idea pops up. If I don't write it down, it's gone, and it's gone forever because it doesn't come back usually.
Yeah, Anne Lamott, the well-known writer, really argues about carrying a notebook. I cheat these days and carry my iPhone I have an app on it that records stuff. Right. And many are the 8-second recordings I have while I'm out in the woods. You know, just some idea. Because like you say, if you think you're going to remember it later, you're not going to remember it later.
I could kick myself for all the experiences I had when I worked for the Bureau of Land Management in some really beautiful country in New Mexico. And I didn't write nearly as much as I wish I would have in my field journals. I really didn't. And I can't remember. I thought, I'll remember this. And it doesn't happen, does it?
Well, I mean, life kind of gets in the way sometimes, too.
That's true. Yeah. You have any plans for doing any more books here recently?
Well, I was working on a couple of different books when I got pulled off to start this weekly newspaper in the Mid-Valley. So, that has been extremely time-consuming. So there's been no mental energy left for working on other projects. But a couple years ago, I hiked every day for a year straight. It turned out to be 367 days. And these were hikes that my rules were they had to be out in the woods. They couldn't be around the neighborhood.
Right.
And they had to be for at least an hour. And so I did that for 367 straight days. And so I'm working on a manuscript about that, which is sort of a fun, you know, I did it's as much about my dog as it is about me, too. I have a rescue mutt, and she was with me for most of those. The other thing that I'm working on is I'm interviewing a 97-year-old very dear friend who lives in Houston. He's a lifelong East Texas Republican. And he's one of the best people I've ever known. His philanthropic efforts towards land preservation have been unmatched by anybody else I know, and so I'm working on a little book, sort of almost like Tuesdays with Maury that Mitch Albom wrote.
Right.
But basically, interviews with the last real Republican. He's absolutely mortified by Trump. I mean, you can't be any more mortified than he is, and he was very good friends with President Bush, who just got buried, and Jim Baker. I mean, people who make liberal pinko tree huggers like me kind of recoil. But this guy is an astounding guy. And I met him in Summit County because he had a place over there.
Right.
And so I spent 4 days with him in Houston before I came up here in the fall. and I will be going back there in April. And he's 97, so,
wow.
You know.
We had better do
and
it.
Is, well, part of it's, you know, what's the key to living to 97? And
right.
A lot of the stuff is what you read in longevity books. But he insists on having several martinis at 5 o'clock every day. But it has to be a real martini, no vodka. So
okay.
For anybody taking notes, especially young people, I would advise starting to drink martinis at a very early age.
That's, you know, my father was a Republican because he was fiscal Republican. He wanted to make sure the balance, the budget was balanced. He wanted to make sure there were responsibilities. I feel the same thing. He would be incensed if he saw what was happening today to what no longer is the Republican Party.
Well, I got the impression that part of it in East Texas was that the East Texas stranglehold on the presidency was usurped by this guy from New York. So I think they were a little bit upset about that. But I got the impression that there was a big plan afoot in East Texas to sort of regain the Republican Party. And my friend, the 97-year-old guy, fiscal responsibility is his big issue.
Right.
So he thinks that people should pay their own way.
It would be nice if that was possible for everyone, wouldn't it be? The other thing that I wanted to talk with you about a little bit here is when you are writing for a magazine like Backpacker Magazine, there aren't that many outdoor magazines that you can really write for. What's the formula there that you use? How do you get an article sold to a place like that?
Well, I've been writing for them for a really long time, since the 80s. So
okay.
it's these days it's more common for them to contact me to ask me to write something. I went hiking on the Arizona Trail last year with the lady who was just appointed to fill John McCain's senatorial seat in Arizona. They asked me to do that story. Martha McSally was her name. She's decided she's going to section hike the entire Arizona Trail. So I was a pretty good logical choice
right.
for that. Basically, people need to really realize that they're not writing for the reader of a magazine. They're writing for the editor of the magazine. So you really do need to figure out what the editor wants. That makes your life a lot easier.
It really does, doesn't it? I've had a number of editors that I wish I would have thought about that before I started writing my column.
Yeah, and it does not pay to tell an editor what they should be doing.
No, it doesn't, does it? Don't want to make your editor mad. Or the title editor that puts the title on the story,
yeah.
For sure. Yeah, I've read a lot of Backpacker Magazine articles and a lot of yours. The thing I've always worried the most about is places that are special to me, finding them in the Backpacker Magazine, the last 10 great places we're going to ruin by telling you about them.
Yeah, I refuse to do those stories. And that hasn't endeared me to Backpacker Magazine, but it's just the way it is.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're getting close to the end here. It's been a real pleasure to have you back again. I forgot when we did this last year.
Last year.
It was last year. It's gone now,
it's
isn't it?
It's all blurred, man.
It's all gone now,
yeah.
For sure. And remember, let's talk a little bit more about the Roaring Fork Weekly Journal. You can pick that up just about any newsstand. I saw it here down at near the Beer Works here the other day when I picked my copy up.
Yeah, it's right here at the Village Smithy. It's a lot of places in the Roaring Fork Valley. We've only done, our fifth issue comes out this week. So we're still working out a lot of kinks, website kinks, distribution kinks. But we're having fun doing it, so I hope people go out of their way to pick it up.
Well, that's the real important thing. If you can't have fun as a writer, then something's wrong. So, again, thank you for coming in, John. I appreciate it. And our next segment of For Land's Sake is February the 12th at 4:30. Until then, whatever you do to Mother Nature, do it for land's sake.